This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. While the country is wrangling with the political situation, and of course, while a lot of questions are now currently being resolved, there is still other matters at hand that we need to explore. One such matter is, of course, the economic situation of the country. More importantly, how the capital markets is doing and will do in the future administration to come. And because of this, we have the delight to speak to ICMR, or the Institute of Capital Market Research. ICMR, if you aren't aware, they are an initiative by the SC, or Securities Commission, funded by the CMDF, or the Capital Market Development Fund, as an independent think tank produced to produce researchers that may support the understanding of the development of the capital markets here in Malaysia. And boy, do we have a treat, because we have the chairman of ICMR, none other than Tan Sri, Dr. Munir Majid. Tan Sri, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. We want to understand some of the items that is surrounding the role of ICMR. Maybe we can start with that. What would be some of the key features of ICMR so that our viewers can perhaps understand what you guys do and what you guys, I suppose, will achieve in the mandate that you guys have?
Well, thank you for having me, Ibrahim. Actually, ICMR, as you just described, does research relating to the capital markets, but it does not do that research in isolation. It does not, become just like a think tank or an ivory tower. I mean, we are driven by the imperative of being relevant, being multidisciplinary, and being sort of something that people will find useful, the work that we do. I mean, for example, in the context of the pandemic that you have just mentioned, we did quite a bit of work in terms of the retail trading on Bursa at the time of pandemic, in terms of sort of trading in the new environment, the new retail traders who are coming into the market. We looked at retail investor behavior in 2020. And, we did a survey of how they are coping. We also look on the other side of the coin, so to speak. While a lot of money were released into the market, not least by the moratorium, there was a lot of free money available. And those who had that free money, who could use it for sort of ends other than just financing their company needs, because a lot of individuals also got this kind of moratorium and they got into the market. So they are, if you like, a lucky lot. But on the other hand, you had people who did not have balances to use at all, who did not get access to this kind of free money. You will remember, Bank Negara Malaysia in 2019 had said that 52% of the population will have great trouble to raise just 1,000 ringgit, and 76% are not able to sustain themselves for more than 3 months. And therefore, it's the other side of the coin, these deprived people who were not in the market at all. And we also address that issue of the 14 million people, or 62% of the working population, who are not covered by any kind of statutory institution. The fact that 40% of the contributors to EPF have less than 10,000, and with withdrawals, what would they have? So there is this other side of the coin, the issue of those who will not have financial resources to carry on with ordinary lives, and whose coverage in terms of the safety net does not exist. And so we also look at this kind of issue. So to make the point that we must have a more comprehensive social sort of safety net system in the country to ensure these people who are a majority of the population are covered and link a contribution to any kind of coverage, pension coverage, not just contribution from, among so through employers, but also contribution through income, because this is going to be a dangerous position in the future. What we have found that the gap, you know, between between retirement and given our higher sort of expectancy, life expectancy rate, there'll be 19.2 years, you know, before you know, as it were, you have to depend on your pension for 19.2 years before you know you finally get away from the world. And so this lack of coverage, on the other hand, and there is also access to financial resources, which gave rise to huge increase in trading volume on the bursa, for example, 336%. Average daily trading volume. So coming back, you know, to the pandemic's impact on the individual and his activities in the capital market is different. It's very uncertain, and it's also been very uneven and has kicked up a lot of social issues that will arise in the future if we do not address this matter of a social safety net.
Of course. Tan Sri, we want to know how the pandemic has hit the country's capital markets right now. How have Malaysia's markets been impacted by COVID-19?
Well, it was a plus for a while, and then now, you know, sort of the markets, there are lots of markets now, as you know. I mean, not just, you know, Bursa, you know, there's lots of platforms, lots of digital trading platforms, and lots of new techniques of investing and getting investments. I mean, you are aware of robo-advisory services that are being provided, where your startup of investment, you know, for investment can be, you know, as low as 500 ringgit. And then there is a mobility or flexibility in terms of moving funds in and out of your investment account. Of course, it will affect your return if you, you know, move it in and out too much. But there are robo-advisory services, companies in the country now who can give you a return on average of about 7%, which is very good, given that, you know, we're looking at 2% rates of return in terms of fixed deposits. And so there are these availability for those who have the money. You know, as I said, this is not the whole population, and by no means most of the population, but certainly the younger population who have the financial resources, either from income, from wealth accumulated, or indeed from a moratorium payments that they did not have to make, which was postponed. So there's a lot of activity. Now, what worries us is that if there is so much more participation in these kinds of digital-based markets, and sometimes even in digital products, you know, Bitcoin's investments and so on, is there enough knowledge among these new investors? So we've been doing things like financial literacy, you know, how to make sure they know what they're getting into. And I am personally very concerned, because when I was chairman of the Securities Commission, when I started the Securities Commission in 1993, a long time ago, you know, we're talking about almost 30 years ago, the system in Malaysia was what was called a merit-based system. The government helps you along in getting into the market, or getting securities issued in the market, where they even determine the PE multiples in various sectors that could be released into the market. So it is mollycoddling, you know, which I changed it into a disclosure-based environment. So the disclosure-based system that we have now started then, and now people take it for granted, but disclosures must be timely and they must be transparent. And you can't just give half-baked disclosures, which do not sort of inform the public, and the public must be aware. They need to be informed. They must take into account many things that are happening both at the macro level and the micro level. I mean, at the macro level, for example, everyone's been going after tech stocks, as you know, around the world, and start directly or indirectly through investments in ETFs, whose underlying assets may be such stocks. But there is a great change that is taking place in respect of tech stocks, as you know. I mean, with China, for example, changing its policy in respect of some of the big tech companies. You remember how Alibaba has been put on the mat, how the Ant group listing was pulled out through Chinese intervention. You know how Tencent's WeChat group, the authorities in China are looking at it and are trying to cut down to size, these huge tech companies. They've also done something with DD, which is listed in New York, which resulted in huge losses among investors in these kinds of stocks. So we must understand these kinds of macro factors. And people hate China for doing this. But I think if you are more so level-headed about China, I mean, China does not do right all the time or do wrong all the time. In this case, what they are doing is something that the Western economies have been talking about for a long time, the great power of Facebook, great power of Amazon and so on and so forth. They are actually addressing it. They're addressing issues of monopolization, the issues of data protection, the issues of sometimes victimization of the smaller buddies. Because, you know, you look at Alibaba, the volume of transactions in Alibaba, twice the size of Amazon. And so, you know, China is doing things which the West only latterly addressed. So there are some good things that China is doing, but that's a different point. The point is to know that China is doing these things to the tech companies. They're not allowing these guys to become giants that can suffocate people in so many different ways. So when we invest at a very low, small level in tech stock, we must know about the policy. It's not just the regulation. Over and above the regulation, you have government policies. And it is regulation, but it is government policy that also determines the direction in which markets move. And in Malaysia's case, quite apart from whatever policies our government may have, I mean, actually we have no government right now. And, you know, talking about a new prime minister, and there's been an over obsession with politics in this country, and there's been very few leads in terms of what's been to happen. And of course, markets do not like sort of uncertainty. And the market is not going to grow. But there's a lot of investment in ex-Malaysia markets through many products that are being offered. There's a lot of investments in particular sectors. You know, as I said, tech is in, very sexy, but also those making public PPE products, gloves and so on. You know, they are the darlings of the market. So there is this narrow interest. But, you know, you will come to a point again, our public must understand, that policies will change as government changes, as hopefully our government will start to pay attention more to managing the economy, managing the country, than to playing politics and, you know, survival and that kind of stuff, and then see what are we going to do in terms of sustainable development, which is a very important part of our work. We're looking at, you know, people talk about build back better. You know, the alliteration is so, sweet and easy to say, but are we building back better? What kind of policies would we have in terms of, carbon emission? Of course, that is the most important factor in terms of sustainable development, the green economy. climate change challenges. This will happen. And then we must follow it and see whether or not certain companies are using coal-fired furnaces and so on will move on. Will be decommissioned, there'll be costs of decommissioning, but then there'll be advantages of using clean energy, whether it is, we don't have nuclear, whether hydrogen or solar or whatever, or wind energy. So these are the things that are happening in the world. COVID, post-COVID, this move towards the green recovery. However, it is in its early stages, a lot of pressure. The amount of money in the world as a whole that went into this Build Back Better green recovery is small, hardly 16-15% of all the packages, for revival as a result of COVID went into green. Most of it were, very immediate needs that had to be fulfilled. But now with climate change knocking on the door and just on the 9th of August, there was this intergovernmental report, UN report, and we said, we are in dire straits. So every government worth its salt will have to take into account. Floods in Malaysia, we think it's just not things happening in Greece or California in terms of fires and floods in Germany and so on and so forth. There are floods in Malaysia, and this region is also, exposed to a lot of climatic change. And there will be changes that will have to be made in terms of the recovery. And on top of that, we haven't even started in our country to look at EVs, electric vehicles, to replace, the fuel-powered and diesel-powered motor cars and vehicles. Many other countries have set targets in terms of replacement of such vehicles by electric powered vehicles. This will change. And so Malaysia, we are addressing immediate COVID issues. We are benefiting from immediate COVID growth in certain sectors of the economy, but we are not planning. Those things happen as a matter of course. And of course, addressing immediate COVID issue is not a matter of course. And there've been, the $530 billion that's been spent, and the Kanjana initiatives and so on. Yes, but we have not planned enough for the future recovery. And then as we plan, if government has its eye on the ball, when we plan, there will be new companies, new industries, new costs and new advantages, that will come. And so these are all changes, massive changes that will take place, but they are uneven and they are uncertain. Now we have to track the unevenness and the uncertainty, and people get drawn into new products, new opportunities, but they must know that there could be change from those new opportunities, in those new opportunities with new things coming on. Certainly, if I was an investor, I would follow closely the health sector. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of changes, investments in health. There could be investment in vaccine production in our region, perhaps even in our country. There could be investments in antibody tests, products which are coming, to the fore. There will be health sector will be a growth sector, and the good thing about it is you want people to be healthy, and health is actually a sustainable development goal, and it's good. It protects people. It gives them recognition, life, ability to work. So that's one sector that will grow. And then, of course, the other one is the fintech sector. The fintech and a lot of platforms, ECFs, P2Ps, will grow. However, there are problems there, as I said, in terms of the underlying products or products traded on those platforms, but also in terms of skills. and reskill that's needed among the capital market workers. And we're doing work on this ICMR as well, you know, in terms of the level of capability of capital market experts, capital market workers. They need to be reskilled and need to be upskilled. We're doing work with SIDC. We've done work with, and I'm following, still doing it with SIDC, the Securities Industry Development Center of the Securities Commission, to make sure that, you know, as we move along, we have the people to move along with it in terms of the digital world, in particular in terms of the fintech world. So everything is moving and changing, but the directions are not always clear. The benefits will not always be certain, which, you know, brings me back to our financial literacy programs to make people understand that the world, you know, is not just different from COVID. People talk about a new normal. A new normal is not something that's settled to be a new normal that you can see in form and shape as a new normal. That new normal includes a lot of change, a lot of uncertainty. That's a new normal as well. And so it's not an easy world to live in all senses, and including, of course, for those involved in capital markets.
Malaysia's markets were actually supported by strong retail investor participation in 2020. Some key figures that was presented by Bursa Malaysia shows a surge amongst retail investors. And of course, some of the bigger drivers would be for them to understand the markets a little bit better. What would be some of the bigger drivers for strong retail investor participation in this space?
Well, I think the markets were supported, of course, by the liquidity, you know, that was pumped into it as a result of a countervailing COVID liquidity and huge amounts of quantitative easing, you know, in the West, in our part of the world, in Malaysia, Malaysia included. We also did it. You know, pump this money in to keep the economy afloat, and therefore markets will also continue to be afloat. But we do not have limitless access to financial resources like these Western economies seem to have. And so, you know, their markets have prospered, you know, and done better. But then there were two things that are also still happening. That's why I said change and change, and nothing has settled. Now, you know, the central banks in the West are talking about easing, quantitative easing, you know, pulling out, especially in Europe. So, you know, what would be the impact? And then some countries which, you know, spend a lot of money, like the UK, you know, that furlough and all sorts of means are talking about, you know, covering up through revenue the costs incurred through these projects, these initiatives that they did, and Malaysia, you know, we're talking about, you know, our 60% debt ceiling, whether we need to increase it. I would argue we do, but nevertheless, when we do it, there will be, of course, the rating agencies who will then start talking about our credit strength, and then the cost of borrowing for Malaysia and consequently for others down the line will also go up. And that is another problem that could hit us. Actually, two things have changed. One is these fiscal and monetary initiatives and policies are changing as well. And the second thing that's changed is COVID, you know, is untamed, and you can see the impact on markets in the US of Delta, and they got scared about the Delta variant, the ability of existing vaccines to actually immunize the person against COVID. Delta COVID, that particular strain of COVID-19. So they panic, they're scared, and they are taking account of this potential threat. And so far as we are concerned, again, we have this issue of the jabs and the non-jabs. This what some people describe it as vaccine apartheid. You know, this matter that the West are hoarding in the vaccines and not being made available, which is true. And so the availability of vaccines, the availability of vaccines which can stand up to Delta is another problem. And then, of course, now, of course, it's summer in the Northern Hemisphere. They are talking about boosters for those who already have had two jabs. So boosters for those who have already had two jabs means even fewer vaccines available the non-jab countries, you know, of the South, including, Malaysia, ASEAN, particularly Africa. Of course, people forget about Africa. So this will then impact their own ability to open up their economies, and their exposure to COVID will continue, and it's going to affect their economies and their markets. Let's not, sort of, avoid that conclusion. So things are so uncertain, and we in Malaysia, have added our political uncertainties to these uncertainties, which is my greatest regret and sadness about our country. And I do hope we will sort ourselves out. Take objective and professional advice, both to face the COVID crisis and to prepare growth through the financial institutions and, of course, the capital markets.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have further discussions with Tan Sri Mulyo Majid, the chairman of ICMR. Thanks for staying on with us. This is Notepad. I have with me Tan Sri Munir Majid, the chairman of the Institute of Capital Market Research. Tan Sri, let's move on with our conversations on this topic. One item is, of course, another exploration of how individuals can continue to earn for a living. Because as individuals continue to struggle to make a living, how well prepared is the typical Malaysian household in terms of the shock of lost jobs and income in light of high household debt, high unemployment, weak wage growth and rising income inequality? Does this all spell a rather bleak news for Malaysia as a country?
Yes, I think this you know, people get excited when they talk about capital markets, when they talk about new products, when they talk about new technologies, but the vast majority of our population are not in a position to be so excited, and to enjoy the benefits of new products and jump about and on new platforms and so on. We have an unemployment rate. You mentioned unemployment in Malaysia, 5.3%, and it is expected it will be about 4.5, 4.6 through 2020 and 2021. With high unemployment, and as I mentioned to you, the fact that there is no social safety net, there will inevitably be social pressures, which can be expressed finally in terms of political disquiet, And so all these interlinked factors are something that must be addressed to ensure that we generate enough growth to provide employment and therefore reduce unemployment. However, the fact that that we have the, fourth industrial revolution and beyond means that there could be a displacement of employment as well through the use of, robots and what have you, the new technologies. There'll be a displacement. Therefore, there must be a very clear focus on reskilling and upskilling the people. so that they will not be just displaced and left at the bottom of the heap, just like that. At the same time, in terms of our education and training, we should refocus and move training, particularly in education, in the direction of the needs of the new economy. So Malaysia has got a lot to face. That's too much. If we will not do it right if we do not concentrate on what we have to face. And that's going to affect the common people.
The country right now is going through a transition period. It used to be a matter of fact that this country doesn't see government changes at any rate. But right now, we're going to have three prime ministers in a space of 3 years. This has brought about some change of thinking, a change of dynamic into how we can shape our country moving forward. And of course, the background to all this is that the pandemic has hit us, the economic situation is fraught. How do you think the country can bounce back from all these challenges?
I think the country can bounce back if there was less political skullduggery and less concern on the part of whoever is in power, whichever government is in power, less concern for its survival, political survival. I mean, the Muhyiddin government was very concerned for its political survival. And I'm not saying it was not concerned for the survival of the people and the economy, but it was also concerned, and it was to the point of obsession for its own political survival. It was like fighting against the pandemic with one arm behind its back, always looking over its shoulder to see who is going to plot its downfall, how to move forward to ensure you continue, have an emergency or whatever, ensure that you're not challenged or not have parliament meet and so on and so forth. We cannot go on like this, even with a new administration, with a narrow, wafer-thin majority in parliament. We need to continue to be concerned. This is why we need to have a unity government, and we need to have a fit for purpose right now cabinet. It's not just like I must give jobs, to 50 or 70 people to ensure they will support me in parliament. No, we must actually cancel all that kind of notion. What we want to do is we have a unity government. We have a friend of mine has a very good guy has come up with this notion that we must have a pandemic cabinet. Short term, we must have a pandemic cabinet. And so you pick people. Yes, there will be the political leaders. They have to be at the front. But you do not want the cabinet to be populated by people who do not make any contribution, to managing the pandemic. And there are experts around, particularly in the medical experts around, who can help. And therefore must be like a war cabinet they had during a war. The war, Churchill and so on and so forth. We have a pandemic cabinet. On the other hand, we should also, a new prime minister must be a great orchestrator. He must be someone who is able to organize and then orchestrate what has been organized. And to do so, he must identify critical areas for the economy, including for the capital market, that have to be addressed, generate working groups, expertise in addressing those important areas for the economy, for the political future of the country, reform, and then manage these reports and outcomes from these working groups at the higher cabinet level, or having a council, a kind of for the future. If you talk about the medium to long term, the kind of reforms that we need for our country, but also don't forget we have this immediate challenge to bring them up and not just have yes men running the country, have people who are professional, independent, and committed to Malaysia, committed to the country to do so. There is this great tendency just to have yes men, to have policies which are short term, which is an ego trip for some ministers. I want to do, you know, and then announce it quickly as something that I have achieved, you know, and we're not using institutions that exist in the country, which may not have, which is not under government control. We have MIBR, you know, we have ISIS. Why? Because, you know, they are bercamuk, the Malay word, you know, all over the place, the government's all over the place. Now, if someone wants to be prime minister, you know, his remit must be to get the country and the government in order so that he can address immediate pandemic needs in an organized, clear, clean, professional fashion. At the same time, think about the medium to long term in a discussed and not hidden way, you know, playing politics. We must identify what have caused the decline of our country and then work on it to make it better. Education clearly is one of the areas which has really gone downhill, and race, religion issues. You know, many you can identify them, but there is an immediate need, there's a medium term. So all this will have an impact on people's lives, on markets. Markets will see something's being done, something organized is happening. There is a future to hope for, not just infighting all the time. Then, you know, our work too at ICMR will, if you like, you know, be a bit easier, but, you know, we still have to continue with the minutiae of, you know, literacy, financial literacy, the minutiae of having a safety net system that you can submit to the government. You must have a broader, wider, deeper safety net system, and in particular, our population's also aging. You know, there are many things that will come out to prepare Malaysia and its markets and its people, and support its people, the most important thing, the people, for the future.
Thank you. Thank you, Tan Sri. That was a very interesting conversation with Tan Sri Muni Majid, the chairman of ICMR. If you've missed any part of this conversation, just head on to astroawani.com. You can search for ICMR there, or you can search for Notepad there. There are plenty of conversations like this that can be and must be continued. So share your thoughts with us. Use the hashtag AstroAwani or Awani News, wherever you get this kind of material or this kind of content on your social feeds. Until then, thanks very much for watching. I'm Ibrahim Sani, signing off for this episode.